Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Hey, Dan. Hi, Connor.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
What's up, guys?
Matthew Trueblood.
What do you expect from Kimbrell once he's up and good to go?
I expect dominance. His fastball velocity dipped a little bit last year. Craig Kimbrell, as hard as he throws, his effectiveness is not all that reliant on his velocity. The guy with a lot of spin on that fastball, good command to all four quadrants most of the time, and then that really hard knuckle curve that looks so much like the fastball out of the hand that batters find themselves flailing a lot even when he's not in the zone. He can lose those couple miles an hour, and even if he doesn't get them back, he's going to be an extremely effective pitcher and one of the best strikeout pitchers in the league for at least another couple of years.
Intelligent, in-depth sports talk for your workday.
What they are is they're out there, they're talking, they're yapping, and they're trying their best.
Bernstein and McKnight, middays on the Score.
Bernstein and McKnight broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, home of the Tucson and Santa Fe Sport. Jonah Carey of Sportsnet, the opener podcast, is going to join us with a national baseball perspective, or in his case, technically, an international baseball perspective.
Oh, Toronto counts for that, man.
I think Montreal, right? Jonah's
well, I'm just
going
saying
to...
Toronto counts for baseball.
Correct.
Montreal counts for Jonah.
Jonah's going to join us at 9:40. Len Casper is going to be on site with us at 10, the midday midway at 10:40. Theo Epstein, Cubs president of baseball operations at 11, and White Sox first round pick Andrew Vaughn is scheduled to join us at 11:30 as we sit atop the right field bleachers here on the porch at Wrigley.
It's a nice view today.
And a sighting, by the way, of infield gull.
That's true. Infield Gull was wandering, taking ground balls at every position. Saw him at third, saw him at first. He was getting off the mound a little bit.
Ranging from third to first. I mean, really showing tremendous range.
Impressive work.
Just checking it out probably for later in the game. 312-644-6767. That's our number at WSCR The Score. You email us at Bernstein and McKnight at 670thescore.com. You go there to listen to us live. We stream at 670thescore.com. You want to text? You can. 67011. When you send one, we reply. Message and data rates may apply. Twitter is at Bernstein_MCK. He's at C1 McKnight. I am at Dan_Bernstein. Download the radio.com app.
It's press conference day.
Yep, Craig Kimbrell press conference pregame. Don't have an exact time yet, but he is a Cub. He has passed his physical. That's the news if you have just joined us.
John Heyman reporting that just a little while ago. Sounds like there's going to be a press conference. Bruce Miles was in on this as well from the Daily Herald, so that was... that is the news, and that is the latest, and we'll have Theo Epstein at 11 o'clock to talk about all the permutations of what happens next.
When you download that app, you can stream The Score on your mobile devices and interact with the show and the station on Facebook by liking the 670 The Score page. You want to watch us? Look what's here. It's that video camera, the video feed directed by Brian Gertsch, and you can watch us on Facebook Live and watch 670thescore.com. Rich Wyatt is our engineer. Jay Zawoski is our executive producer on site. And back at The Score Studios, we have Rick Camp and the executioner Ray Diaz, not in the back, he is up front, but still doing what he does. And we're getting news also. It was Ken Rosenthal wrote a very interesting piece. When we regard what the Cubs' commitment was to Craig Kimbrell, I think it's really helpful to understand the market. And there's some information as to what that market was.
Yeah, apparently it was the Tampa Bay Rays. And that matters for a couple of different reasons. First and foremost, because our last year's baseball guest, Jeff Sullivan, spent a lot of time talking with us, and they decided that he was too smart to be talking to two idiots on the radio, and instead the Tampa Bay Rays hired him because he's a brilliant baseball mind, and they sopped those up. The Rays were in, And not only is that seemingly the important part, but some of the conversation that we had with Joe Sheehan on Tuesday and then subsequently with Matthew Trueblood yesterday was about the decline that the Red Sox saw in Craig Kimbrell last season. Baseball fans realized, saw it, and kind of understood that Chris Sale was getting big outs for the Red Sox when it mattered, not their closer, Craig Kimbrell. So because of that, whether it's lack of confidence, lack of command, tipping pitches, as we heard yesterday from Chris Cotillo, that lack of performance, that decline, maybe scared some people off in the offseason. Apparently, according to Ken Rosenthal, it did not scare off the Rays, not one bit. They offered a pretty competitive contract, a two-year $31 million deal, according to Ken, and a three-year $39 million deal. And to be honest, I look at the difference between those reports and then the reported contract here that the Cubs have gotten Craig Kimbrell under, the 3 years with a four-year option, somewhere between 43 and 50-something. That's the kind of money you should be outbidding the Rays by to make sure you get your guy. Now, that disparity in price doesn't bother me much. They're the Rays. They don't necessarily have the money to keep up with top-end free agents. You're the Cubs. This is where you take you exercise your financial might. This is where you make sure you get your guy to ensure, as best you can, your World Series window.
And as you hinted, the other aspect is that it's not Team X. It matters that it's the Rays. It matters that it's a team that is widely respected for their personnel decisions. They're smarter than most teams. And if one of the really smart, respected teams is the other team in there on the bidding, it makes you feel good.
Yeah, it does. I mean, they're a game and a half behind the Yankees in the AL East. They have been a terrific ball club without Tyler Glasnow, who was leading the American League in a pitcher war until he got hurt, and that pickup has been huge for them. The Austin Meadows thing has been huge. So for that team, with all those shrewd moves, realizing stuff that matters. Also in this, something that you mentioned yesterday, and it's kind of borne out here because the Rays have, and Rosenthal has kind of confirmed it, that they saw, that front office, saw adding Kimbrell as a real shot in the arm and a point of validation to the guys in the locker room. You know, as more and more we talk about the front office in baseball, just front office X, trying to get attached to the mindset of players and their clubhouse and make sure that they understand how those guys are working in between their ears so that they can get the most out of them in between the lines. That kind of thing it's this weird, at least I have it, this weird sense of validation there. If that smart baseball team is even understanding of those drives in baseball, then seeing it here kind of just, it's like checking your math, you know? It's just like making sure that the cheat sheet that you had written down for the test matches that guy's cheat sheet. And you're
right,
good to go.
It's more like after the test, you know, what did you get for number 7? And you go to the really smart kid.
Oh,
and
I had
like,
5.
Right.
Oh, good, I had 5.
Oh, thank
God. I had 5. I don't know how I got the 5, but I also had 5.
Yeah, then there's like the really smart kid that wouldn't even want to tell you what he had. It's like, come on, man.
Yeah, Cale Bongers. That was that guy. That guy's going to Dartmouth or something like that. And now
right,
he's got
I'm not
3
cheating.
Degrees.
It's the test is over. I just want to know what you had because we all have to check it against you because you never get any questions wrong, you horrible bastard. The 815 texter says, why does Madden have infield Gall playing in right field? Well, we saw, just so you know, the other day, during the game,
yeah,
the
fog
evening,
game.
The fog night, yeah, there was a Gall in the infield. They're just kind of hanging out there on the dirt, walking around, not caring that there was a baseball game going on. And we did, I'm 100% certain that Gall that was on the infield before was the very same one. 100% certain.
You're an avian dude,
yeah,
so that
guy.
Makes sense. You're the guy I would check with on that. We had seen multiple Galls out here, wondering if that one was the infield Gall. Then one landed at third base.
Right. He flew right in, and he landed and gave us our answer. This segment brought to you by Subway. Subway restaurants feature a different 6-inch sub for $3.79 every day. Subway, make it what you want. At participating restaurants, additional charge for extras, plus applicable tax. No additional discounts or coupons may be applied. The game today, right here, is Miles Michaelis against Cole Hamels. And Hamels has a nice-looking ERA at 3.62, and trying to get that... Trying to miss some more bats, though. So one thing we need to see from Hamels is he can't live the Mike Montgomery life at this stage of his career.
I think fastball command gets him to miss a few more bats. That's been a little bit lacking his couple last starts. Hopefully that bounces back around. And hopefully, you know, for the Cubs' sake, they're able to pay back the Cardinals for that sweep of last weekend. That was it was discomforting. It was ugly. It was not fun at all. It was like Jay Zawoski watching the Blues win a Stanley Cup Finals game. It's terrible stuff. Can I ask you something about the press conference that's planned for this, though?
Yes.
I don't. You're the optics guy. If you're having a press conference to announce the signing of the best reliever in free agency this year, but it's June 7th, do you do the thing where Kimbrel's in a suit and then you put the jersey over the suit and then the hat goes on and you do the photo opportunity? Do you know that weird jersey over suit thing that you do for big-time free agents?
If he is signed and under contract with the Cubs, the question is, where is he on the roster? If he has signed a contract, because he would be a player in uniform.
I assume
even
so.
Even if he's not going to play.
Even if he's wearing a suit.
Well, my guess would be the better optics would be to have him in a uniform or a hitting shirt or
warm-up kind of stuff.
Yeah, definitely have it look like he's active and ready sooner rather than later. If purely to answer your question, you use the word optics. I think to make him look more player-ish than I haven't played-ish is better because it's more active and more dynamic.
You want him saying something like, yeah, I just got out of the bullpen throwing a little bit, or just played
feeling
catch
good
with this guy, or just played catch with Mike Borzello, and that was, you know, real nice to have happened, and, you know, he's sweating a little bit, and he's got his, I'm working Craig Kimbrel, and sure, I've got to go down to the minor leagues to warm some things up and make sure we're all good to go to start the season, but that's... You don't want him in the suit.
Yeah, does that make sense to you?
Yeah, you want him ready to go.
Yeah, I want him to. I want him to look like a baseball player and not a guy who's been sitting out for months. 312-644-6767 is our number at WSCR. The Score. It was sort of a strange little sports bubble we had last night because of the way the NBA is spacing out the games. There was a hockey game that, of course, was decided in part by another completely missed call. That league is a clown show.
Doc Emmerich, who is amazing and one of the best play-by-play guy working. Just absolute fantastic.
And just a lovely human being, too.
Is that right? Yeah. Oh, yeah, you've met him a couple of times. You all right there?
You just made me spill water.
You got a drinking problem?
Good God, you got it all over yourself. I didn't think you were going to ask a little follow-up there. Come on, man.
So Doc Emmerich, you know, he would not go Jeff Garland. He would not go, you know, Code Red in a broadcast booth going off on the league or another broadcaster like that. The guy goes, it's mystifying. Which is about of a hardcore...
That's an indictment.
That's an F-bomb from Mike Emmerich.
It was!
Yeah. Can't have a good hockey game without a huge controversy ruining the entire thing.
Because they can't call it tripping. They can't say he tripped it because it's hockey. They have to say, they slew-footed him. It's clearly a slew foot. And they're like, oh, God, I got to look up slew foot again and find out how that's different from tripping somebody. Answer, it's not.
No, slew foot includes the leg.
Right, it was stick and leg, but
a trip is a stick.
It's like a sweep the leg Johnny kind of thing, you know? It's a Cobra Kai move.
The Slewfoots are my favorite Roots cover band.
and then Connor and I, of course, end up having to look up Slewfoot, and he's getting into the Merriam-Webster, the whole history and etymology of the word Slewfoot.
And I told you it came from an old nautical term, and you laughed at me.
No, it did.
And then I was right, because I looked it up once before, and I guess slewing is wrapping something around something else. I don't know.
Get the damn calls right. This is the worst thing about it, too. All these bad calls are going to end up with the Blues winning the cup. Right? I mean, think about that.
And then you'll have marches and yelling and screaming, and then more fans fighting each other. I mean, it was Bruins fans fighting Bruins fans last night.
Right.
So for the parade, obviously, you're going to have Blues fans fighting Blues fans because of the penalties that got called and the screaming and the yelling. That's just what's going to happen. I promise you that.
Okay. Well, that's my experience around Blues fans. Are there an inordinate number of Blues fans that smoke? Is that like a St. Louis hockey fan thing? Is there a correlation?
It has to be, right?
Every time I've seen gatherings of Blues fans, everybody's smoking. So I've never really completely anecdotal observation.
In the building?
I don't know. It looked like a basketball game in North Carolina used to look.
We've got a Cubs lineup for against the Cardinals today. Hamels and Michaelis are the starters. We'll get you the rest of the lineups when we come back. And, I don't know, more yelling and screaming about a hockey game where the Blues won something.
scoreboard update.
I was going to give the lineup during the update. Do you not want me to do that?
No, I'd like you to give me the lineup during the update. Have to do it as though each one of the players is on the Japanese pro wrestling tour.
I don't want to be racist at all, so I'll just read it normally. In the Chicago...
Well, why would you have to be at an opportunity to be racist?
That's on you, not me.
I'm looking at an opportunity to not be racist, as a matter
of fact. All right, well, then don't read the lineup, and I'll give it to you after a minute.
All right, fine. I won't read the lineup.
Bernstein and McKnight, we are at Wrigley Field. I guess this is the portion of the day when the tour groups come through and get a talking to at various points of the ballpark. The tour group just up the first baseline, one behind the hitting cage, one behind the Cubs dugout, and another underneath the video board and left.
I've always assumed that the tour groups that go before day games are also going to the game, right? The tickets, and you get the tour group, and they do the whole thing?
I think so.
I would imagine. Well, they're spending the weekend, maybe, and they start it with a tour group, then they head downtown and eat some good food or something like that.
I don't know, but I got a chance to walk the empty park as they were hosing it down. I got here a little bit early just because I enjoy ballparks. I like the feel of the architecture, and it's just, you know, sort of a nice time, a little quiet time before the show. They've really, for all the criticism and everything that we went through with the rooftops and the signs and the city and Tom Tunney and everything else, bottom line, especially up here with the revamps, they've done such a nice job with this place. It's a nearly impossible task, but threading the needle to maintain much of the charm while also bringing it into the next century of baseball business, it's a win.
Yeah, we're out on the right field porch, the Bernstein and McKnight Show. If you come by the 3600 block of Sheffield here, I promise Dan will wave to you if you wave to us. If you're out at the seat, there he is, waving right now.
Hello.
It's a good view. Hello. It really is. And I think you're right. They got most of these renovations done correctly. Ballpark still looks old school from the outside. Lineups out today for the first of three against the St. Louis Cardinals. It is Anthony Rizzo leading off and playing first base.
Ah.
Chris Bryant is at third. Carlos Gonzalez is in the three spot and in left. Javi Baez at short. Jason Hayward in right. Victor Caratini gets the day behind the plate. David Bodie's at second base. Albert Almora Jr. is in center field. And Cole Hamels is your starter. So Wilson Contreras gets a day off.
Wow, Cargo third. We got to talk to Theo about what he said about Cargo, because he's a true believer. You know, it's one thing to take a flyer on a guy. Theo was adamant, like, this guy is capable of having a run of several weeks.
One of his patented tears.
Yeah,
I think he said
an epic tear.
Yeah, that's right.
Like, you sign this guy with the hopes or expectations going to go on an epic tear. That's fine. What I need to know is, how long do you give him? How long do you wait to see, all right, and any time for that epic tear now, and his game might be telling you, no, I'm old and bad.
You've got the manager who picks spots days ahead, you know, based on starting pitchers and bullpen matchups, all that kind of stuff. Joe's really good, or likes to at least, look at pockets of whether it's pitching or hitting that he can spot his guys into. And changes the lineups like that. You know, what have we heard over and over again? Oh, he needs to stick with one lineup. He needs to do this, that, and the other thing. Well, if you had a guy that you're trying to get going, a veteran like this, you're taking a flyer on, you want to try and find a heater with,
yep,
this is the manager that's willing to do that. I find it very interesting. Really, when we look back on this season, you're going to find all these different little data points where Joe and the front office either did or didn't match up on things. And as we get to, is Joe going to get another contract? Where are the Cubs going with their manager after this season, however it ends up? We're gonna go through all these little things, and Carlos Gonzalez is going to be one of those, probably smaller data points, but he'll be one.
815 texter says, I'm so hoping that today at the press conference, Craig Kimbrell doesn't come out looking like Fat Thor Lebowski. With the sweater and everything.
So, Craig, what have you been up to? I have been eating.
Right.
A lot.
Has that ever happened? I mean, do you remember a time where a team has unveiled a player? And, you know, I went through it personally as a PR guy. I went through it when the Rockford Lightning signed Ralph Sampson.
Ralph, we need to get you a bigger suit.
No, he wasn't. It's not that he was fat. It's that he showed up 20 minutes late to the game. And then we got him in uniform and put him on the floor, and he couldn't walk.
Theo Fleury comes to mind.
Theo
a little
Fleury.
Out of shape for the Blackhawks.
Oh,
that was a disaster.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Jesse
yeah.
brought him in to studio for a preseason game, and he was profusely sweating because he was high as balls.
Well, we know things after the fact, though, that sort of change the way we view that. But,
yeah, but that doesn't mean you're ready to get between the pipes.
When we were signing somebody, and then he's there, it's like, I'm telling you, couldn't walk, let alone run.
I want to say there was like an Eddie Guardado press conference that did not go well, visually speaking. But then he pitched well because he's Eddie Guardado.
Every day, Eddie.
He's ready to go. Yep. It's fine. It's all set for your role. Jonah Carey is going to join us on the other side of a quick break. He of Sportsnet and the Opener podcast. A lot of baseball going on.
Yeah, we should let everybody know again, this show, this lineup is insane today. After Jonah, it's Len Casper here. We're going to do the midday midway at 10:40. That leads us right into Theo Epstein right here. After Theo, White Sox first round pick, first baseman Andrew Vaughn. That's this Bernstein and McKnight show.
We are down the water slide. Stay with us. 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Other than the fact that he throws like 98-mile-an-hour rise balls with a wipeout slider, I mean, I think it's a pretty good recipe for success. You know, if I'm an opposing hitter and I see him come in the ninth, I'm not going to be too pumped. So definitely happy, you know, to have him on our side for sure.
Ooh, 98-mile-an-hour rise balls. I'm there for that. Steve Cishek of the Chicago Cubs talking about his new teammate, and he is indeed official. Craig Kimbrell is a member of the Chicago Cubs. And we are now joined by Jonah Carey on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford, over 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. Jonah Carey's on Twitter, at Jonah Carey. He of the Sportsnet and the Opener podcast. Jonah, how are you? Happy Friday.
These rice balls sound delicious. I want to have some.
Jonah, so the Cubs have Craig Kimbrell under contract. Or pen hasn't actually been put to paper. It sounds like that's going to happen in the next hour or so. Can you make the case, or is it the case that the Cubs are the team that needed him the most from a you know, hypothetical, on-paper kind of stance?
I would argue that the team that needed him the most was the team that ended up signing Dallas Keuchel, which is the Atlanta Braves. The Braves' bullpen has been, you know, hit by injuries and attrition and all kinds of weirdness. And they're in a very, very competitive race. So are the Cubs, by the way. But I think the Braves might be in a situation where if they don't win the division, they might not make the postseason. Whereas I think the Cubs are just a better team overall. I think that the difference in the Braves, even if it's just a win or two with Kimbrel, that could swing their entire season. Whereas with the Cubs, and who knows? I mean, it's hard to say this far advance, but it's conceivable that they, let's say, don't win the division, the Brewers and Cardinals do, and they still find their way into the postseason just because they're a little bit of a better team.
Yeah, I get that. And I think, you know, we've gone back and forth with guys like Joe Sheehan and then Matthew Trueblood and now you here. There's kind of two warring factions. Kimbrel's overall war is wins above replacement over a half a season or two-thirds of a season isn't going to be all that great. On the other hand, the marginal value of one win when you're looking at 94 or 95 in a season could get you a division, like you say. I wonder, you know, which camp you may fall under when it comes to adding, not necessarily this move, but just adding high-powered relievers when you're sitting at or near the top of a division.
First of all, I think wins above replacement is a flawed metric for relievers because you can't measure it just by, okay, he's throwing this many innings or whatever. It affects your entire bullpen. Cishek becomes less exposed. Strope becomes less exposed. Maybe you don't go that one or two extra outs with Hendricks and you save him for a rainy day. I submit to you that there are cascading effects that are had when you sign any relief pitcher, whether it's somebody who with an elite reputation and great stuff or somebody who's just pretty good. The body is very important. I would also submit to you that every single baseball team in the entire universe is making a bazillion dollars in the 10 seconds it took me to make to compose this sentence, and that any money spent on any talent is automatically a good investment, and there is almost no such thing as an overpay in baseball because all these teams are filthy rich and hoarding money.
Well, that's why when Dallas Keuchel and Kimbrel sign after this little deadline where you don't have to forfeit draft picks, there's something kind of gross about that. There's just the whole thing, it still bothers me. As much as I know Cub fans are celebrating the acquisition, it shouldn't be the case that really good baseball players who were available, there should be bidding wars for these guys right away. I can't get past the fact that they both should have been playing already.
I'm going to go really old school on you and say that, and if I sound curmudgeonly, I'm sorry, because I'm not usually that way. But what's happened in baseball is you've gone from people who are and I'm just going to use the term, they're baseball men. They could be baseball women, but baseball people. And they've been replaced by people who are very much looking for areas of arbitrage. They're looking to apply big data to solutions. They're looking to find ways to beat the competition through doing something clever, and that's the end of it. And I think what gets lost a little bit is winning freaking baseball games. If you really want to make a profit, you can do anything else. You can run a widget factory. You can do whatever. There's still going to be profits left for you if you put a winning baseball team on the field. It's not a problem. But there is this clever by half mentality where, well, we don't want to give up the 120th pick in the draft, so we're going to wait until June the 8th. We don't want to do this. We don't want to do that. And again, what gets lost is just beating another team's brains in. That's fun. That's the whole point of the sport. Oh, we're the Red Sox? Cool. We're going to go stomp on the Yankees' heads. That's it. We're the Cubs? We're going to annihilate the Cardinals because screw those St. Louis ravioli eaters. That's what we're going to do. We're going to do that and the hell with anything else. And I just think that's getting lost a little bit in the, all right, well, we got to watch out for this. And then everybody is being hired for this extreme level of caution and cleverness. And there's just not enough, damn the torpedoes, let's just go for it in baseball. And I think it's spreading to other sports too. And I hate it. I hate it. Sports are about competition and it's being lost a little bit.
I love hearing you go full meatball on this. I really do. And while I understand how teams are incentivized to make money, the size of the leagues, the too big to fail financially aspect of it, you know, the moment you turn the key because of baseball advanced media and the NBA, because of the TV deal and everything else, you know you're going to be profitable. How, if you were commissioner then, if you were in charge, how would you incentivize these massive billion-dollar corporations to win?
You flip it. You don't have the draft in reverse order. You don't have everything that is incentivized to reward losing gets thrown away. I don't have a perfect answer for you as far as tanking and rebuilding. I hate the term rebuilding. It's such a terrible term. Teams make more money when they strip things down to the studs than they do when they try to win the World Series, which is maybe the number one problem in this whole thing. I cover the Toronto Blue Jays extensively for Sportsnet, and the Blue Jays play in Toronto. Toronto's the fifth biggest market in North America. It is not Milwaukee. It is not Cleveland. It is a juggernaut. We're seeing it now with the Raptors, and what kind of crazy enthusiasm and a whole country behind you and so forth, and yet they're rebuilding. And oh well, it's clever, it's a good move to do this, and it's a good move to... No, it's not clever. There's such a thing as having a situation where you can rebuild, quote unquote rebuild, and still field a competitive product at the same time. You can give your prospects run and have them play and still not settle for Edwin Jackson in your rotation. So I think that the answer, part of it is just getting rid of things like the draft, or at least changing the rules of the draft, and trying to find ways to reward winning. Now, some people would argue, well, that's going to lead to a situation where the Yankees and maybe the Cubs and the Dodgers are just winning every year. I really don't care. I mean, so what? Then find a richer owner if you own Tampa Bay or Milwaukee or whatever, and find somebody who's going to make it happen. Maybe they can get in the front door with a lower purchase price as a result. So then even if the odds are stacked against them, if they're buying a franchise for $500 million instead of $1.7 billion, then maybe that gives them incentive. But I think that rewarding winning is the way to go, or at least not rewarding losing.
What a perfect way to segue to the White Sox, where for years, Kenny Williams, former player, competitor, noted competitor, was in charge and always going for it. Always, what can we do? Can we find lightning in a bottle with this old guy in this year? And even though we're two games out of the wild card, damn it, we're going to compete for it. And fans like, no, stop doing that. Stop feeding into that because we're not going anywhere. And both points are valid. And now you've got Rick Hahn, who is your Harvard Law and Northwestern Kellogg MBA.
Michigan
undergrad.
It's all his degrees.
Yes. And he's probably the most educated executive in sports. And he is lending the new and modern thinking. Yet Kenny's still there, and there still is a little bit of that. Where are the White Sox now in this? Because they were just so close to 500, and some were saying they need to round out the rotation with Dallas Keuchel. They need to push it a little bit. And we have heard people that, I heard Ozzie Guillen just say, no, trade Colum A, trade those guys off. They're not there yet. Get closer to a championship by selling.
Yeah. Both things can be true, actually, and I love to use this example because it's relatively obscure, but the 1999 Oakland Athletics, before they became the Moneyball A's, they were on their way up, Billy Beane was the GM, and at the trade deadline that year, they traded away their closer. They were sort of near the race. They had a shot at it, but they weren't necessarily leading. They traded away their closer, who was a guy named Billy Taylor, who I think was 37 years old at the time, was pitching great, really, really, really well. He was like the Fernando Rodney of his time. And as a result of their deadline trading, they also picked up a guy guy named Jason Isringhausen. Jason Isringhausen was a former member of Generation K, a very highly touted starting pitching prospect. His arm washed out with injuries, and he became a promising young relief pitcher. So they essentially traded an old relief pitcher, acquired a young relief pitcher, and actually got better at the deadline. Now, that's a masterful example of the craft. That's very, very hard to do. But I think there's a world in which the White Sox can look to capitalize and trade away a guy like Colomé, who is a little bit over his skis anyway. His BABIP is something like 130, even after the recent meltdown against the Nationals. I could see that. And still look to acquire talent that's near major league ready, not necessarily 17-year-old playing rookie ball. So I think there's something there, because I think the White Sox are not far away. If you look at it, don't forget, this team could easily have Manny Machado on the roster right now. They legitimately made a run at him. They thought they might get him, and they didn't. So it wasn't that they didn't try. I understand the Keuchel sentiment, but they made an effort. So I think that there is value in trying to trade away guys who are, you know, expendable like veteran relief pitchers, but with an eye on not necessarily looking at 2025, but something in the more in the coming up sooner, I would say. And I think further to that, if you think the White Sox are on the fringes of the wild card race, and frankly, I think that the fifth team in the AL is kind of unsettled right now with the Red Sox playing so-so ball, and there's a lot of Angels and A's and whatever. Call up Dylan Cease if you want to do that. I mean, if you really want to make an addition and you don't want to spend the money, which I think you should always spend the money, but let's say you don't, call up your guy who, frankly, if I had to bet on it, I think Dylan Cease could be better than Dallas Keuchel this season. Why don't you try that? That could work.
You know, that talking about the 1999 trade the Oakland A's made brings us around a little bit. The motivations were somewhat different, probably because the Pirates are notably penny pinchers, but it's the trade they make with Glasnow and Meadows heading to the Rays, and then you've got Chris Archer heading back to the Pirates. That could have worked out a little bit that way, and yet now you've got a smart baseball team who are as annoying and smart as you've talked about, making moves like the A's did in 99 with young, ready-to-go players, and just kind of, I don't know, did they identify something that the Pirates didn't, or did they take advantage of a penny pincher?
A little of all of it. I think Archer also had a reputation built on past performance. You know, he had put up great numbers, and I'm guilty of it myself. I would write this trade value column, which I still do, and we'll talk about Archer's contract, and he always had this monster contract for 7 or 8 years with 3 club options, and it was all going to be for 10 cents or whatever, and so there became this mythology built up around Archer a little bit that he was this magnificent asset, when in fact, if you really dug down to it, he had that wipeout slider, but his fastball was just so hittable that it didn't, you know, you could just sit fastball basically and just spit on sliders and wait and wait and wait and hit the guy. So there was a certain meat and potatoes analysis to Archer that could be done that said he might not be that good. As for Meadows and Glasnow, I think the Pirates just didn't give those guys enough of a chance. Yeah, the Rays might have out-evaluated the Pirates, but the Pirates ultimately just got impatient. You know, they looked at it and they said, rather than spend money, let's spend our young player capital and go get this guy in Archer. And that, again, that's the hidden insidious effect of being cheapskates. It's that if the Pirates really wanted to get a starting pitcher, they could have gone out and gotten, name a guy, it doesn't matter, they could have gotten anybody, but instead they said, here are these two premium talents, and yeah, they're struggling a little bit, we're just going to throw them on the barbecue, and that's the end of it, because we want Archer. All you had to do was spend money. Money is cheaper than prospects, because Meadows and Glasnow now could come back to haunt Pittsburgh well into next decade. I mean, this is the unintended consequence of being cheap. This is what happens when you don't do things, you know, the go for it way is you can pay the price.
Jonah, great stuff today. Thank you,
thanks,
as always.
Jonah. Thank you, fellas.
That is Jonah Carey. He joins us every Friday with a national perspective on baseball. We'll get a Cubs insider perspective next from our perch here high atop the right field bleachers in Wrigley Field. The Bernstein and McKnight Show, we're loaded because Len Casper's coming up next. Don't forget Theo Epstein at 11. White Sox first-round pick Andrew Vaughn will join us at 11:30. So much going on today on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.